Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Valentine's Day, not too far away. Hope you're planning something special, something fun for your loved ones. With Valentine's Day comes release of a movie. We're going to talk about that today and what that that movie and others like it have that impact on our families, on young women, on girls, on boys. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website. Go to kfuo.org and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. Click on that. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin and all the great work they're doing. Our guest joining us by phone today, Miriam Grossman, MD, and child and adolescent psychiatrist. Dr. Grossman, welcome to Faith and Family. Glad to have you with us today.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Let's talk about your background as a child and adolescent psychiatrist. What led you up to this profession? What was intriguing or what drew you into this profession?
Well, I finished medical school and wasn't too sure about what specialty I wanted to go in. Honestly, the opportunity to step in and help families that were in crisis and to get to know young people, especially adolescents, who were having a hard time just really appealed to me. The amazing thing about psychiatry often is that all people need, and this is something everyone needs to know, very often what helps is listening, not some magical pill. I mean, those are sometimes necessary as well. But just listening and knowing how to listen and be there is extremely powerful. So I was drawn to it, and I continue to find it very fulfilling, and that's about it.
And let's take a look at your career as a professional. You've been working with adolescents, and adolescents in this field of psychiatry for some time now. Let's talk about your experience and what you've gained along the way, what you've learned, what you've seen in your experiences.
Sure. Well, I think the most powerful experience that I had, of course, there's been a lot of people that I will never forget that I met in my office. One thing is that you see that people who are walking around and that you might meet in everyday life and seem, to be fine and nothing remarkable going on with them, you see that they have an inner life that could be extremely troubled, and they could be suffering so much. And so that's just taught me as a human being that, whoever I meet, and whether it's, taxi driver or a waitress, you just don't know what's going on inside. That person could have such huge challenges in their everyday life. And I think it changes you as a person to see that day in and day out. I worked for 12 years at the Student Counseling Service at UCLA. And at that time, during those years, I saw thousands and thousands of young people who were very high-functioning and bright and ambitious. But to my surprise, so many of them were, like I said, suffering terribly in their inner lives. And one of the things that I learned while I was there is that many young people are in distress over the decisions that they have made with their relationships, their social lives, their lives, their intimate lives. And that was really very bothersome to me, because unlike some diseases, like schizophrenia or even some anxiety and depression, it just happens out of the blue, and there really isn't too much that can be done to avoid it. But poor relationships, poor decisions that are made in terms of hooking up and getting together with people who are not stable or are unwell emotionally, those things can be avoided. People, young people can be taught how to make smarter decisions and how to protect themselves. And it bothered me tremendously, number one, that some parents didn't seem to be doing that. And number two, that my profession, the mental health profession, was not stepping up to the plate and saying, for example, warning people about the hookup culture, meaning the campus culture in which, and even in high schools now, and even in some middle schools, where there is unplanned sexual behavior between two people who have no plans whatsoever to even see one another again. They may not. It may be completely anonymous. And I would see in my office the casualties of this kind of behavior, mostly young women, but also men, and feel such anger and frustration that my profession was failing these young people by not, you know, we warn people ad infinitum about dangerous diet and junk food and, you know, too much sugar and trans fats and tanning salons and so on and so forth, but we don't warn them about protecting themselves emotionally and physically as well because of all the STDs. So I ended up writing a book about that subject, and the name of the book is Unprotected, A Campus Psychiatrist Reveals How Political Correctness Endangers Every Student. And it's called Unprotected because that's how I came to see the average college student all over this country as essentially unprotected. And of course, you know, it's a play on words with the phrase unprotected sex. And I, to a large degree, I'm faulting my profession for being too politically correct and not stepping up to the plate and telling the truth about the danger of an anything goes kind of attitude towards sexuality. So that's a long answer to your question.
I
don't know how much more you wanted to go into that. I also wrote other books thank God it's been very successful. My books have done well, and I've been invited to speak all over the place. And I was invited to the United Nations on a few occasions to speak about this issue in terms of the sex education curricula that are promoted by the United Nations. In other words, I was speaking against those curricula. I spoke at the House of Lords in Britain on the same subject because in the United Kingdom they are struggling with the same issue. And so it's really struck a nerve. And so I've continued with that. And of course, today we're speaking about the movie 50 Shades of Grey, which is a movie with very dangerous ideas, ideas that are dangerous to young people if they absorb them. And so I wrote on my blog a parent survival guide to 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm very pleased to say it's been picked up all over the place. I just this morning, I opened up my email and someone sent me a Chinese translation of my blog because people in Taiwan want to get it out to the parents there. And I explain in the blog the dangers of this film and why it's the ideas are hazardous to young people, even if they don't see the film. Although I think many people are going to go in and see the film, even though it's, you know, it is rated R, R meaning that kids under 17 cannot be admitted unless they're with an adult over 21. But It should come as no surprise that it's difficult to enforce that in movie theaters, and kids who want to see this movie are going to see it. But even if they don't, what I'm saying is that the ideas of this movie, which is basically the glamorization of sadomasochism, of humiliation and bondage, sexual violence, those ideas are seeping into our culture, especially with this movie being such a, looks like it's going to be a blockbuster. I hope not. But I want parents to be aware of the impact that it can have on their child and to know what to do about it, because it's actually a great opportunity. As bad as the movie, you know, as awful as these ideas are, that sadomasochism is erotic and that it's just another option in the bedroom, it's a great opportunity to sit down with your child, your teen, even a preteen, if your child has a lot of friends that are teenagers, and if your child is, you know, very savvy about what's going on out there, then I would even say a preteen. But it's an opportunity to talk about some really critical truths about relationships and how to recognize a disturbed relationship and how to avoid it, all sorts of things about the bonding that occurs during sex, about how the brain reacts. Goodness, there's just really a lot to say. So in my guide, I give parents lots of information and tools on how to achieve, get this kind of conversation going, and what to say. What to say? How do you talk about sadomasochism to a child? That's what I set out to answer.
And we'll get into some of those topics here in just a little bit. Before we go much further into the topic of the movie, let's talk about, there's a plethora of professional careers when it comes to helping professions in mental health. As a physician, as a medical doctor, what does your profession bring, contribute to this conversation? What can you as a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, bring to this conversation that we might not necessarily see from some of the other perspectives in helping professions?
Well, I'd say what I can bring as a psychiatrist who went to medical school is I can bring the biological part into it, the understanding of how the brain responds to intimacy, how the teen brain is immature, and how that leads to poor decision-making and impulsivity, things like that, which are so important. How there are hormones that are released during intimate behavior, and those hormones affect the brain. For example, if we want to let's talk about this in the context of the film, the plot of the film, which the bare bones of that, in case some of your listeners are fortunate enough to not be familiar with this movie, the bare bones of it is that Anna is a college student who's very inexperienced in love, and she enters a dark relationship, you could call it, with a very troubled older man. And as the story goes along, she's able to rescue him. He's a guy that had a horrible childhood and was abandoned, abused, neglected, and really never experienced love, and feels that he can't. And the only way that he can relate to a woman or be intimate with her is if it's accompanied by violence and by emotional and sexual, physical abuse. So here you have Anna, who's this inexperienced, naive, and weak girl, and then you have Christian Grey, who is the gentleman, let's call him, who is so emotionally disturbed and so forth. So what happens is that she falls for him immediately. He's also described, at least in the book, as being, you know, of course, the most handsome man that ever walked the earth, and, you know, billionaire, and all of the, it's kind of ludicrous if it weren't so sad, actually. It's laughable, the plot. But she, at a very early point in their relationship, very, very soon after they meet, she has sex with him. Consensual, and she's wants it, and that part of it is sort of like a hookup kind of a thing. She doesn't know him well, he doesn't know her, and they have sex. What's important to know that is that when two people engage in intimate behavior and holding and hugging and, you know, gazing into one another's eyes and so forth, and kissing, intimate touching, the brain releases a hormone, more so in women than in men, but also in men. And the name of that hormone is oxytocin. It's a powerful hormone. It tells the brain that you're with someone special right now. You're with someone that you can trust. And you're with someone that you can get attached to. So you can let down your defenses and mm-hmm. and relax and bond with that person. Now, needless to say, this happens whether you're with your husband or wife, you know, of 20 years, or with a stranger that you met in a bar. And it's important for young people especially to understand that once you begin engaging in sexual behavior with somebody, your brain is getting messages that really may not be accurate. You may not be with somebody that you can trust or that you want to bond to, but it's going to happen anyway. And so with Anna, for example, she began having sex very early with Christian Grey. And so when the time came for her to make a decision about whether she was going to go along with his desires to abuse her and tie her up and beat her and all this horrible stuff, she was definitely not making a neutral, well-informed decision. She was already predisposed toward this guy and already emotionally involved. So that, for example, is critical information for kids to have, and especially, like I said before, young women, because oxytocin is predominantly a female hormone. Men have hormones that cause them to become deeply connected as well to their intimate partners. But it seems to not happen as quickly as it does with women. And another fascinating thing is that when a girl's estrogen level is high, then it pumps up the effect of the oxytocin. And that happens. I'm going to try not to get too complicated here, but a woman's estrogen, a girl's estrogen, is highest in the middle of her monthly cycle when she ovulates, which of course makes perfect sense that a woman is designed to bond emotionally with a man. When she may begin a new life with, that she may conceive with. It all is a very beautiful process in the right context. So there's just wonderful messages in our biology that we can learn from, and mm-hmm. that I've written a lot about female biology in my books and in my blog. It's one of my favorite subjects. And you asked before about my career choice, and my second choice would have been OBGYN, just because I love female biology and the whole science of the monthly cycle and conception and birth, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been able to learn more and more about that in the past years that I've been doing this research. So what I'm saying is that it can be explained to girls and to boys that, you know, sexual behavior is not, it's not just a recreational activity like, you know, going out there and playing basketball together. You know, kids are led to think this by sex education and by the culture and the entertainment industry that getting together intimately is just, you know, something that happens and then you move on. It's no big deal.
It's just one more activity in our adolescence.
Correct. And it's that nothing could be further from the truth if you look at biology. Biology, neuroscience says that this is a very powerful act, a very powerful behavior to be intimate with another person. I mean, even kissing is a complex, it's complex mm-hmm. because we know that the nervous system around the lips and the odors that people will smell around the lips, there are pheromones that are released, and these are odors that have a powerful effect on us, on the brain, and it's just great stuff. But the bottom line is that it is a powerful behavior, and people need to cultivate a sense of awe for the act of intimacy, even without intercourse. The closeness and intimate behavior, even without intercourse, is powerful. And that, of course, is not at all the message of this film. What a parent can do is, what I want parents to do, is to become familiar somewhat with the plot of the film. And I give some links. There's actually a synopsis on Wikipedia, and there's also a longer one. I give the links on my website. I'm just going to tell people, if I may, how to get to my blog.
Sure.
So my website is Miriam Grossman, MD. It's all one word, MiriamGrossmanMD @hotmail.com. And there's lots and lots of good stuff on there. But if you want to see the parent survival guide to this movie, it's on my blog. And I encourage you to, I almost would say that this movie is a golden opportunity, that if it's done right, if the parent uses this opportunity correctly, then they might even be grateful to Universal Studios for putting out this piece of trash, because it could be used. You could have one of the most important conversations with your child that you've ever had.
And you're not saying we should go see the film, but just the fact that it's out there in media, in the world, is a teachable moment. The fact that there are things like this out there opens up the doors to conversations about this, that we need to have conversations about this with our kids.
We must have conversations. And yeah, what I'm saying is that, you know, the images that are out there now and the music, I mean, you can hardly turn anywhere, at least, you know, the screens that I'm looking at and the billboards of the handcuffs and the, you know, Mr. Gray with his tie and all this stuff, and, you know, the soundtrack, the trailers that are constantly being played. Yeah, there's just so many opportunities. And that kids have to be told that there's such a thing as being manipulated and sucked in to an agenda. Now the you know, the woman that wrote the book series and the producers of this movie, they want one thing. I mean, they want money. They want to make as much money as they can. And kids need to understand that those people don't care about the welfare of the individuals that are going to come and see the movie or read the books or be sucked into this idea that sadomasochism is okay and glamorous. They don't care. A parent or guardian or grandparent or whoever it may be can underscore that the child should be aware of this phenomenon of being sucked in to something that could be really dangerous for them. And it's similar to all the advertisements for junk food and all the other things out there that we know are dangerous. And most parents have warned their kids about things like that and about bullies and exposure to the sun and all sorts of, you know, alcohol, cigarettes. This is really not that different, except that in this case, the parent is warning the child about a dangerous idea.
Mm-hmm.
And kids should grasp that there are dangerous ideas out there, not just dangerous food and dangerous drugs and alcohol, but dangerous ideas. And this film has quite a few dangerous ideas. One, of course, being that it's okay to be abused if you consent to it, and kids have to hear that humiliation, abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse is never okay.
This is one of those things where a campaign similar to the campaigns for against heroin would be appropriate. Not even once is quite often the campaign used when it comes to, you know, abuse of drugs like heroin. And this is,
yes,
I think, one of those cases.
Yes, it would absolutely apply.
Yeah.
Because even one poor decision when it comes to sexual behavior can change the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
About that, there is no doubt. There, you can certainly get a STD. You can get HIV. You can have to deal with a pregnancy and possibly an abortion, which contrary to what a lot of my colleagues in mental health say, is a very big deal for many, many men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to violence in intimate relationships, you know, you can, even if the other person consents, you could wake up the next day and be arrested.
Mm.
So, even one, you're correct in making that comparison with heroin. Even one time can change your life forever.
It's a very dangerous road. We need to take a quick break, but when we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation. We're talking with Dr. Miriam Grossman, child and adolescent psychiatrist, on the release of the upcoming film, 50 Shades of Grey, and its impact on girls, women, even boys. We're going to talk about that a little bit more here when we come back to Faith and Family. Stick around for more right after this break on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Our love turns to special people on Valentine's Day. On my short list are the many women who become unexpectedly pregnant and make a loving adoption plan for their babies. These heroic mothers can teach us a thing or two about true love. They love their babies enough to know they can't give them the essentials. They possess a love strong enough to put their needs behind their babies. After placement, their love doesn't go away. It stays for a lifetime. Maybe you're adopted, know someone who is, or know of mothers whose love moved them to make an adoption plan. please commit with me today to pray for these amazing women. Pray God would grant them peace and joy when their hearts turn to their babies on Valentine's Day. Adoption is a plan that both mother and her baby can live with.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Jesus and the Bible exhorts us to agreement in all biblical teachings. I'm Rod Zwanitzer, one of the four hosts of Concord Matters, a show with that worthy goal, Concord, inviting you to join us Saturday mornings at 10 and repeated Tuesdays at 2 p.m., as well as 24/7 on demand.
Listen to Concord Matters on the Messenger of Good News, KFUO.
Hello from Michigan. We are Roger and Leela Thurow, members of Our Savior Lutheran Church, located in Scottville, just a few miles from the Lake Michigan shoreline. For the past 3 years, Leela and I have been day sponsors on KFUO in honor of our wedding anniversary. The voice of KFUO streams into our home, bringing the blessings of programs like Law and Gospel, Thy Strong Word, Book Talk, Moments of Assurance, and many more. If the Messenger of Good News has blessed you, we would like to encourage you to consider becoming a KFUO Day Sponsor. This opportunity to be a KFUO Day Sponsor reminds me of the words of a great hymn. If you cannot speak like angels, if you cannot preach like Paul, you can tell the love of Jesus. You can say He died for all.
This is Mary Schmidt. To be a day sponsor, call me 314-996-1518.
Finding just the right partner is a blessing when it comes to achieving God's plans. Hi, I'm Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Before taking this position, I worked with LCEF and my home congregation. It was a joy to find a true Lutheran partner that understood our unique needs as we built a school and welcomed new families into our church and community. I hope you experience that joy too. Visit lcef.org to find out how your ministry can become empowered in its kingdom work.
You've discovered worldwide KFUO. Now discover how easy it is to listen to KFUO where you are. Discover our online stream and on-demand programs that allow you to listen where, when, and how you want. Discover how easy it is to listen on your radio, smartphone, Wi-Fi radio, and other listening devices. You've discovered the Christ-centered message that KFUO proclaims daily in both word and song. We are KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking with Dr. Miriam Grossman, child and adolescent psychiatrist, and we're talking about the release of the film 50 Shades of Grey. Does it pose some questions, some concerns? What are the questions and concerns parents might have when dealing with this? Not necessarily that your children are going to see it, but all the things that surround it. There are questions and concerns, especially if their friends are exposed to it, or parts of it, or their families are talking about it. What do we talk about it? How do we go about talking about it with our children? Dr. Grossman, when we've talked a little bit about girls, and we'll certainly come back to that, but I'd like to talk about boys when it comes to the topics that come up in this film, and what is it important for us to address with boys, especially adolescent boys?
I'm glad you're bringing up boys, because a lot of people might assume that this film is really only an issue for the girls because it's a young woman in the film who's getting abused. But no, it's certainly the warped ideas of 50 Shades of Grey is certainly dangerous to boys. And I want parents to speak to their boys before they begin to associate romance with handcuffs. As he's standing in line at the grocery store or checking his email, he's being bombarded with images that would suggest that. So I want to describe a letter that I got from a young man who kind of said it all perfectly. He wrote that a lot of his friends, and he, along with many of his friends, saw this incredible level of excitement about the book when it came out, I guess, a year or two ago. And they saw that their girlfriends were very interested and almost obsessed with this book, and they wanted to know, what is the big deal here? So they found out that the book is poorly written, but what their girlfriends are drawn to is the sexual fantasy. And the sexual fantasy is of being completely controlled and intimidated by a man who ties up and degrades and hurts women. And that just is completely, astonishing to a young man. He says to me, what? That's what a woman dreams of? That's what sold 100 million copies? What am I supposed to do, recreate that type of scene? I want to please her, meaning his girlfriend, but what if I'm not into that? My whole life, listen to this, my whole life I was taught to be a sensitive, caring, and respectful man. Women always insist that's what they want. I am totally shocked and confused. So, you know, this is the reaction of a young man who was raised to respect women, to be kind and thoughtful, and respect women who are strong and independent, and to never ever be harsh or rough, or let alone lay a hand on a woman and be violent. I mean, this is just completely the opposite of what he's learned his whole life. And here, women are flocking to this 50 Shades of Grey. So you don't want your son to be perplexed and to be confused about such an important issue. He has to be absolutely clear that the behaviors that are showcased in this book and movie are never okay. He could pay a high price for it. Even as we were talking about before the break, just one incident could throw his life off track. Now, he also should be told, and just, you know, say it straight. Don't be fooled by all this hype around 50 Shades of Grey and the sadomasochism being erotic and glamorized. A woman who is emotionally healthy does not want to be treated that way, does not want to be tied up and beaten. I mean, she wants to be cherished. She doesn't want to be controlled or stalked. She doesn't want handcuffs. Basically, I say she wants a ring and a wedding date. That is a emotionally healthy woman. Parents know that that's true, but your son may not be sure. And it needs to be said, maybe more than a few times. Now, so your son may want to know, I'm talking to parents, if that's the case, if an emotionally healthy woman does not want this, then why are so many girls and women going crazy for this movie? So I'd say that some girls, certainly not all, but some girls are very into this movie because of the way this character, Christian Grey, this completely fictionalized, made-up character, is described. Now, the author wouldn't sell one book if she wrote it about a guy, you know, this just awful guy, abusive guy with no redeeming qualities who abuses a sweet, beautiful young girl. So what the author did is that she blended some good qualities into this nasty character of Mr. Grey. She, so to speak, she added some light to the darkness which he represents. In fact, all of this is right in the title. The title of this book series and film is 50 Shades of Grey. In other words, nothing is black and white. Everything is nuanced. even the idea, even in this relationship of abuse and harm and humiliation, it's not black and white that this is necessarily healthy or unhealthy, good or bad. It's gray, and there's 50 shades of it. And the power of this movie, the toxic, I would say, power, is that it plants this doubt in people about an issue that is black and white, which is that abuse is never okay. It plants seeds of doubt, especially, you know, we know that young people are vulnerable to these ideas, and it plants these seeds of doubt that perhaps under certain circumstances it's okay. But getting back to the guys, so Christian Grey is a character who, yes, he's very dark, but he also has some qualities, some, you could even argue, some healthy masculinity. For example, he's very ambitious, he's accomplished, he's determined. When he pursues her, you know, he does it single-mindedly. I mean, of course, he's doing it in a very disturbed way. But putting that aside, you could see how a naive person, a woman reading this, could say, "Wow, you know, he's really in love with her. He showers her with gifts. He buys her a car, and he wines and dines her, and he beats up. He protects her from these creepy guys who are hitting on her." And there's a scene where Anna is drunk and vomiting, and he takes care of her, and he holds her hair back while she's vomiting. Like I said, it's laughable almost, but we have to take it seriously. So there's this character of Christian Grey, who is endowed with these with some real, I'm going to call it masculine, classically masculine characteristics, which many women do want. They want to be protected and provided for. And in fact, for different reasons, which would be a whole other program, those qualities might be difficult to find in young men these days. And so I'm sure, I'm certain of it, that 100 million women who bought the book, and all the women that are going to flock to this movie, at least it sounds like they are not attracted to the S&M part of it, to the sadomasochism. They are attracted to the relationship. And there's another level of this, and that is that many women, especially young women, have a are attracted to this notion of saving a man from his inner demons, like saving a man, rescuing him, a man who is troubled because he's had a difficult life, he's never known love, he's given up on love, he thinks it's impossible for him to experience love, and she's going to just swoop in, and her devotion to him and love is going to rescue him, and then they ride into the sunset. It's kind of like a Mother Teresa kind of a syndrome. So that, I think, is another element of this story that women are into, because as you follow, there's a trilogy, that's actually three books, and by the end of the book, Christian Grey really has changed. And, of course, in real life, this wouldn't happen. Very, very unlikely that this would happen. But they are married, and they're expecting their second child. So the movie, the story is, one of the themes of this story is that a young woman who's determined and full of goodness can rescue a man whose inner life is in shambles. She just has to stick to it and be there for him and deal with whatever he shells out to her. So this is another one of those dangerous messages.
It sounds like the story takes, you know, uses the attractiveness of a romance to draw in the audience, but yet also normalizes this dangerous and hurtful behavior.
Yes, that's exactly what it does. I still contend that very, very few women that are watching this are turned on, are sexually aroused by scenes in which a woman is being hurt physically or emotionally. And if they are, then that is an indication, in my opinion, that there's some emotional disturbance there. An emotionally healthy person avoids pain, flees from danger and pain. An emotionally healthy person is not aroused by inflicting pain on another person.
Hmm. So when is it appropriate to discuss these things? You mentioned earlier that certainly teens, you know, high school, college age, to have some conversation about this, because you know that they're being bombarded with these topics that come from this film. As you said, standing in the checkout line at the grocery store with all the magazines there, or the TV. The movie trailers and things like that are promoting the film, even the music, the soundtrack, all these things are bombarding us. How and when do you approach this topic with your children? At what age? I know you mentioned high school, but maybe even middle school students as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm just going to mention once more, because people who are interested in reading this in more detail can go to my blog. I've written a parent survival guide to 50 Shades of Grey, and it's on my blog at miriamgrossmanmd.com. So regarding speaking to kids, I'm sure that most parents are scratching their heads when they hear this, and they're saying, huh, you know, I'm supposed to talk to my child about sadomasochism. Well, yes and no. I'm saying that you need to know your child. And if you happen to have a child who, if you've managed to protect that child from what's going on in our culture, and you're homeschooling, or, you know, you don't permit internet or television, et cetera, Then you know, this really may not be necessary. You have to make that judgment. But I think the vast majority of kids out there are aware of what's going on. Certainly, teenagers, and even preteens. It's like I said earlier, certain preteens that are very savvy about things and noticing the billboards and the ads and the music, or they may be hanging out with older kids. So I'm saying that they need to hear something about this, but only a very limited amount. There's no need to be graphic and to go into details. What I'm suggesting is that, first of all, I want parents to know that they have a significant influence on their child, even though it doesn't seem like they do. That what parents believe matters, and what parents expect of their children also matters very, very much. And this is so regardless of whether the parent themselves has made poor choices. Excuse me. If a parent has made poor choices, you know what? Welcome to humanity. We've all made poor choices, some of us more, some of us less. But that's not a reason to say to yourself, well, you know what? I've messed up myself in this area of relationships, so who am I to sit down and tell my kid what to do? No. No. I urge parents to not think in that way. Whatever the case is in your own lives, you know more than your child does about life. You know more about relationships and about what can happen when poor choices are made. So that's one thing. The other thing is that you need to just think ahead of time. First, read about the plot. Like I said, there's a on Wikipedia, there's a brief synopsis, and there's a longer synopsis at a website called The Book Spoiler, but there is obscene language there. And then think about opportunities for private time, private uninterrupted time, perhaps in the car if you're going somewhere, or while you're together in the kitchen or the garage. And dads, also very, very important to be involved, if at all possible, especially with boys. This message is best coming from, for the boys to come from the same-sex parent. But, you know, life isn't always ideal, and any adult that is close to a young person can step up to the plate here and do this.
Don't you think that it's also important for daughters to hear from dads that it's that to be treated like that, that abuse is never acceptable, that no one should ever treat you like that?
Yes. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Very, very powerful, very important. Yes.
With just about a minute and a half left, you've brought up some really great points and pointed us to a helpful resource to your blog, MiriamGrossmanMD.com, and we'll link to that today as well with the archive of the program. But just one other point I want to talk about, and that is, and this has come up already, the normalization of this abusive behavior, this normalization of these dangerous behaviors. Where in your profession, even the professional organizations are starting to change when it comes to how they regard this type of behavior, correct?
Yes, that is true. The American Psychiatric Association last year came out with their new manual for the diagnosis of emotional disorders, and they removed sadomasochism as an emotional disorder. It's no longer considered one unless the person is somehow impaired in their life due to that behavior. So, this is a huge issue, a big discussion. How did that happen? Why did it happen? But I want to reassure you and your audience that there are many, many mental health professionals that disagree without decision. And I believe it's just a matter of time until more and more people speak up in disagreement with that. I want to just go back 1 minute to talking to kids. I know we only have a short time left, but parents can explain to kids that this movie is pornography, and that pornography is very destructive to the mind and the heart. I have a link to a great website about that. And then I just want kids to hear from their parents or from other adults that the man Christian Grey in this movie is a man who is very confused about love, and that in his mind, love is tangled up with bad feelings like fear and pain. He's not able to have a normal relationship, and he can only enjoy a relationship with a woman who lets him hurt her. It sounds very strange, you can tell your kids, because it actually is strange. And you wish that he or she didn't have to know about this, but sadly, they do have to know. They don't have to know more details than that.
Right.
Just to trust you that this is a dark and horrible story, and they need to turn away from it and to instead go in a healthy direction toward healthy relationships.
Miriam Grossman, MD, child and adolescent psychiatrist. Dr. Grossman, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
You can find out more on our website. We'll provide a link with the archive of today's program in the on-demand section on KFUO.org. Coming up next, Thy Strong Word right here on Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.